Good afternoon, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the DiaSorin fourth quarter 2009 results presentation conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlo Rosa, CEO of DiaSorin. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to the quarter four results. I would like to comment some elements of the quarter four results, summarize the achievements of 2009, and then I will turn to Andrea Senaldi, who will take you through the numbers. Starting from revenues, quarter four growth has exceeded 15% in line with company expectations. In the U.S., vitamin D growth has been very strong again. Some of you may have noticed that both Quest and LabCorp have indicated in their conference call that they've experienced a 50% growth in vitamin D in the last quarter. As DiaSorin, let me remind you that we have decided to use testing penetration as an indicator of the market potential for vitamin D. Testing penetration means what percentage of a country total population is tested for a certain parameter, in this case, vitamin D. In 2009, vitamin D penetration in the U.S. has reached 9.5% of the population from a 5.68%, which was reported in 2008. Even if the growth has been very impressive, penetration in the U.S. is still 20% lower than what experienced in 2009 in other countries like Denmark or Australia. We expect, therefore, that the demand for vitamin D testing in the U.S. can continue to grow, pushed by the awareness of GPs and specialists of the importance of vitamin D levels in individuals and patients. In Europe, notwithstanding the Roche competition, we continue to hold market shares that varies from 50 to 90% depending on the different countries and markets. In the different markets, vitamin D testing continues to grow between 30 to 100%, and Italy is a good example where the awareness of vitamin D is picking up and physicians are ordering more and more testing. Specifically in this market, we have initiated a collaboration with a primary pharma company specialized in selling vitamin D as a treatment for osteoporosis. The aim of the project is to convince GPs and specialists that treatment without testing does not make any sense. The result of the program that we run in Italy is that vitamin D sales have doubled in 12 months, and we expect the same rate in 2010. A similar project will be started in 2010 in Spain. It is clear that vitamin D in Europe is still an untapped opportunity. Regarding vitamin D clinical positioning, it is the DiaSorin strategy to work with some primary clinical research centers to generate clinical evidence to support proper use of vitamin D testing. We have agreed to fund two studies, one with the Massachusetts General Hospital intended to link vitamin D deficiency to elevated blood pressure. The study will take 12 to 18 months to complete, and if successful, will provide clear evidence of the importance of proper vitamin D levels to decrease the risk of myocardial infarction. The second study is run with a Jewish hospital in Denver, and it is intended to provide evidence of correlation between vitamin D deficiency and the severity of asthma episodes. Both clinical protocols will be shared with the FDA to allow DiaSorin to expand its current claims in the U.S. And this will clearly provide the company a lead in its ability to properly market our test in the U.S. versus competition that may arise in the future. So it's a defensive strategy that we set in place. Going back to the U.S., in quarter four and in 2009, overall, was a very strong year in terms of liaison placements. Over 160 liaisons have been placed in the country, the majority of which in hospital and satellite labs, which are interested now in bringing on board vitamin D testing. In quarter four, 60% of the installations outside corporate accounts of the big national labs did carry also infectious disease along with vitamin D, proving that vitamin D can be a perfect hook for the rest of the menu. Going back to Europe, in Europe we have experienced in quarter four a very strong growth that at constant exchange rate has exceeded 13%. Italy remains a pillar for Europe with a Liaison installed base that exceeds 700 units in 2009. Let me remind you that in Italy we dominate the virology and microbiology market where we have our system installed in over 90% of the microbiology testing labs. This will be key to facilitate the introduction in this country of the new line of HIV and hepatitis products when they will be available on the Liaison XL. Germany and France, respectively the first and second largest IVD markets in Europe, have recorded both in Q4 as well as in 2009 a very strong performance in terms of revenue growth and Liaison installations. In fact, in quarter four, Germany grew 13.9% and France over 24%. Now, going now from Europe to the rest of the world and commenting some of the most relevant geographies, China and Israel continue the solid expansion that we have registered in the previous quarters. China has grown over 25% and Israel over 60%. It is noteworthy that the Liaison installed base in China has now reached 180 units, 60 of which have been placed in 2009. As anticipated last year, in quarter four, we have completed all the activities necessary to start operating directly in China. And in January, we have initiated to manage directly the Chinese market in some key territories. In fact, until today, as you know, China was a rep office responsible to manage a network of distributors. One more geography I want to comment on is Brazil. Brazil, conversely, has been very disappointing both for the last quarter, where we have lost market share, and for the year, 2009, where the total growth has been single digit. This is related to the fact that a large government ELISA tender awarded in 2008 has not been renewed in 2009. However, in 2009, Liaison installations have continued to be successful, and we expect 2010 to start growing again at a double-digit rate. So Brazil is still a strategic geography for us. Overall, in the quarter, 106 Liaisons have been installed worldwide, with a total number of Liaisons installed in 2009 reaching an impressive number of 460 units. We expect Liaison to continue to grow strongly also in 2010, driven by three factors: the availability of new products like parvovirus, the geographical expansion, and the strong demand for vitamin D in certain geographies. Now, let me now comment on new products. As far as new products are concerned, let me comment on the Liaison XL program and the development of new products. In December 2009, all clinical studies involving the new HIV, HCV, and HBV products have been concluded on the Liaison XL platform. HIV has been submitted in early February to GMET, and by the end of March, HCV and HBV will follow suit. Approval is expected in June-July timeframe. Platform development for the XL and assay validation continues to be on schedule. Due to the large success of the Liaison, however, Liaison XL continues to be shielded from customers, and commercial introduction is really dependent on the viability of the new screening assays on board of the platform. As stated before, 2009 has seen a record year in Liaison placements, and we expect that 2010 will still see a very large number of Liaison installed. And therefore, we do not want to freeze the market with the XL until we feel that the market will be ready to take this new system. In terms of product development, in quarter four, we have completed the development of the Liaison parvovirus and the new BioPTH. They have been launched after the holidays in all territories with the exception of the U.S. We are planning to initiate clinical studies to obtain FDA approval for parvovirus later in 2010. We have no rush, since in the U.S. we currently have the only FDA-approved test, which I remind you we got when we acquired Biotren. Last, for molecular, all product development activities now have been moved to Ireland, and we continue negotiation with an outside partner to finalize the decision on the manufacturing on what we call LAMP analyzer, which is the closed system for molecular testing. I will now turn to Andrea, and then we will take questions.
Thank you, Carlo. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I will take you through the standard presentation that you should find on the website. Before going through, as traditionally I do, the four highlights, let me just point out that the excellent results you will see today are compared against the quarter four 2008, which in itself was an exceptional quarter, with a very strong growth of the top line versus previous quarter of 8. Now, if you turn to the highlights, Carlo has already pointed out that the revenue grew in the quarter by 15.5% versus the comparable quarter of the previous year. Let me add this, that as you know, in the last part of the of 2009, the dollar has turned to devaluation versus the euro, affecting the consolidated numbers in euros. If we look at the growth on a constant exchange base, the growth would be 19% versus previous year. Clearly, the drivers remain the U.S. market, which in dollars grew more than 44%, supported, as Carlos said, by vitamin D, but also by infectious disease sales growth, including the effect of the Biostream product. By the steady enlargement of the liaison install base, which reached 2,975 instruments by year-end, with placements in the quarter of 106 instruments and placement in the full year of 465 instruments. We continue reporting a consistent improvement in our operating margins. If you look at our gross margin, it grew by 23% with 70.7% rate to the turnover, and our EBIT grew by 33.5%. And last but not least, we had a strong increase in the quarter of our net earnings, which grew 56%. Now, let me turn to the details of the P&L. We already discussed the development of revenues. In the quarter, we reported revenues of just above 79 million versus 68.5 of the previous year. The gross profit set at 65.9 million with an incidence over the turnover of, as I said, 70.7, which is an improvement of 4.5 basis points versus what we recorded last year. Our operational expenses have been growing slightly more than proportionally to the turnover in the quarter, and I will comment later on the effect that bring this up. As a consequence, our EBIT, as I said, developed by 33% in absolute amount versus last year, and our EBITDA moved from 23.9 million to 30.7 in the quarter, with an incident over the rate, the turnover, which went up by 4 percentage points. Last but not least, our net results, for net results, we reported almost 16 million in the quarter versus 10 million last year. Now, going to the details of the revenue development, clearly the driving force of our top line growth remain the Liaison platform. Liaison sales in the quarter went up by 31% year on year, quarter on quarter, leveraging on the enlargement of the recent past of our menu, of our product menu, clearly by the vitamin D sales, and leveraging on the enlargement of the instrument install base. As a consequence of this increase versus the other technologies that we carry in our portfolio, the weight of liaison sales on the overall turnover in the quarter was 66%, versus 58 last year. If we look at the full year number, liaison sales have moved up by more than 6 percentage points from 57.4 to 63.8% of the total turnover. If we look at the revenue development by geography, and if we start with Italy, where we had reported a single-digit growth in quarter three, mainly on the background of a very slow August, Italy has grown in the quarter by more than 13% versus last quarter of 2008, in line with the development of Europe, of the rest of Europe, which grew 13% as well. North America, we already said, grew 44% at constant exchange rate, as reported is 32.3%, and the rest of the world has been decreasing slightly by 3.6% as a consequence of what happened on the Brazilian market that Carlo already commented. This has been, on the other side, compensated by the strong growth in the most recent initiatives like Israel, for instance, which grew by 59.5% at comparable FX, and China, which continues growing at close to 30% versus previous year. If we now move to the profitability, we already discussed the growth of gross margins, EBITDA and EBIT. In terms of percentages, EBITDA gross margin moved up by more than 4 percentage points, EBITDA by, again, 4 percentage points, and EBIT moved up by almost 5 percentage points. Now, the improvement margin level is continuously driven by the change in the mix between the technologies, so Clea revenues taking over ELISA and RIA sales. Clearly, the strong growth in vitamin D, which carries one of the highest margin in the group, and the continuous leverage on the install base, where the depreciation decreased incidence over total sales. As opposed to this, we had a slight increase in the incidence of operational expenses. If you look at the track of DSO and reported results, you will see that every year we do report a quarter four, which is especially higher than what we report in the previous part of the year. And this is due to several factors. As a start, I would mention the fact that, as we mentioned several times previously, we continue building our structure and our in-house force following the development of the top line. Therefore, the investment in human resources, particularly as far as commercial force and aftermarket assistance, keeps following the development of sales. We also have a concentration of events, particularly marketing and promotional events, in the last part of the year. And last but not least, we have the effect of the strategy of geographical expansion that we implemented in the last few years. This year, for instance, versus previous year, you will have the full effect of initiatives like the Czech Republic, which wasn't existing in Q4 last year, the Canadian subsidiary, and the investment we did in China in order to turn the subsidiary from a service company into a trading company. Last but not least, I mentioned before, the net results are growing 56% versus previous year. As a rate to turnover, they moved from 14.8 to 20% of total sales. In the quarter, we have reported net financial cost of 0.6 million. Versus net financial cost of 2.4 million in quarter 408, which are, as I remind you at the time, of a non-cash nature because they are related to the evaluation of our debt in US dollars. If we now come to the full year preliminary 2009 results, and if we start with revenue, we closed the year with revenue just above 304 million, with a growth of 24.3% at current exchange rate. If we look at constant exchange rate, the effect goes down to 23%. We improved our gross profit by 33%, moving up 4.5 percentage points. We continued leveraging the operational expenses structure, and the rate to turnover has moved down from 36.1% to 34.7%. As a consequence, our EBIT grew by almost 50% versus previous year, moving from 28.9 to 34.7. Our EBITDA by 43%, closing the full year at 122.5 million versus the 85.6 of last year. And last but not least, our net results improved by 86% versus previous year, closing very near to 70 million versus 37.5 last year. There is one note that I want to make over our net result that should help you understanding the development between 2009 and 2008 and the future projections. If you turn to the next slide, you will notice that we have adjusted the net result according to the item which I believe we already described in the previous conference calls that happened during 2009. In 2009, we had and we enjoyed the provision of a tax relief law, which allowed us to step up the goodwill that we carry on the balance sheet and to make it tax deductible and to align our IFRS accounting to fiscal accounting. If you add on top of this the different movement between the 2 years of exchange rate gain and losses of a non-cash nature, you end up with a one-off effect on the 2009 results of about 5 million. And if you adjust the 2009 earnings, in fact, for this, you would end up with 64.8 million, equal to an earning per share of 1.18 cents per share. In terms of the balance sheet, what I would like to point out is that we end up the year with a net capital employed close to 207 million, against which we had a total shareholders equity of 218 million and a positive financial position of just above 11 million. At the end of the period, we hold liquidity for 48 million euros. This has been clearly a function of the strong cash generation that the Azorian has enjoyed in the full year 2009 and in the quarter. In the quarter, we had operational cash flow of 17.8 million before capex of 6.6. And the operational cash flow on the full year basis is 37.4 million. If you add to this the exceptional payments, particularly as far as the substitute tax and the capex for distribution rights, you have a cash generation which is well above 40 million per year. Having said this, we said that we have a positive financial position at the year end of just about 11 million. Bear in mind that this occurs having paid out a dividend for 6.6 million and a one-off tax payment of more than 4. I would like now to leave the floor to you for a Q&A session. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. First question is from Massimo Vecchio of Mediobanca. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon to everybody. I have two questions. The first one is on the tax rate, if you can give some indications on what to expect for 2010. And the second one is on your net cash position in terms of financial position, if you can give some indication on what could you do with this cash and how any kind of M&A activity could be developing. Thanks.
Go with tax.
Okay. Thank you, Massimo. Let me just comment on tax, and I'll then leave Carlo to answer your following question. In terms of tax rate, you should expect, as you have seen in quarter four, the tax rate has realigned to the usual 36-37%, and you should expect this to progress in the future as well. There is very little we can do on the tax rate, and you have to understand a significant amount of our profit is based in the U.S., where tax rate is actually higher than the average of the group.
Okay, take your second question. Realizing that you keep asking us this question, and it's very obvious that for lots of different reasons we cannot disclose our activities, but let me tell you that today we have three arms of the business that we could use this cash for. We believe that when it comes to bone and mineral and vitamin D, that business does not need cash in terms of M&A activity. It does require cash in terms of funding clinical studies, which is what we are doing in the U.S. In order to fortify our position and claims vis-a-vis vitamin D in the U.S. Infectious disease, which represents over 50% of the business, would need, in my opinion, some cash dedicated to M&A activity, especially related to the fact that there are today's opportunities with certain very large conglomerates that do have infectious disease business that is not managed or strategic for them. So we continue to explore opportunities to see whether those conglomerates are available to dispose of assets that could be strategic for DiaSorin. The third one, the third leg, is molecular diagnostic, where we have invested cash in licensing, and today is all internal work, and so I don't think any M&A activity that today would make sense vis-a-vis molecular.
And do you think that Big Pharma may be interested in reinforcing their interest in diagnostic?
I don't know. It depends. I think first that the question should be better answered by the pharma. But all said and done, today there is one pharma company that clearly indicated their interest, which is Roche, 20 years ago already. And I think very recently Novartis came up with some announcement saying that they would like to reinforce their diagnostic arm. What does that mean? I have no idea whatsoever. But I don't think that it's easy today to assess the strategy of these pharma companies. For sure, it's not easy for us.
All right. Thank you very much.
Next question is from Giacomo Picchetto of Arcos Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. Just a couple of questions. The first, very trivial, I've seen in your press release you're communicating some one-off cost in your SG&A due to legal cost and IT cost. I was wondering how much is that in million euros. Second thing, just to understand, how much of your 24% growth top line stated is it coming from the vitamin D, if you made the split of it? And did I understood right that basically the starting point for 2010 is that vitamin D is going still at a strong pace like in 2009? Thank you.
Okay, again, I will take your first question about the one-off item and leave Carlo to discuss vitamin D. You're right, we indicated this. There is about half a million of costs that are related to mainly a few things. So one is the enlargement of our IT structure, both the one existing around Saluggia and so the, around the head office and also in the subsidiaries. By now we have connected also China to the network. We have also borne some legal costs which are associated to, again, the strategy of geographical expansion, when we had to set up some additional subsidiaries to sustain some additional costs for setting up additional subsidiaries. As well, we have borne an investment to fulfill additional compliance requirements in terms of trading policy. So all in all, you're looking at items that I would call non-recurring or around €500,000.
Okay, thank you.
When it comes to your first question, we don't disclose vitamin D because we consider that as an information that is proprietary to the company and can be used by our competitors. I think that overall I can tell you growth of this company comes from, is fueled by three activities, vitamin D for sure in certain territories, geographical expansion is the second one, and the third one is on the infectious disease side.
But did I understand right that vitamin D is still going strongly as in 2009? This was your beginning comment, is this right?
Vitamin D grew strongly in the U.S. market in 2009 because of increasing demand, and the U.S. is one example. In Europe, vitamin D, it is growing between 30% to 100% depending on the different geographies. Namely, the penetration of vitamin D testing in Europe is below the U.S., which does represent further opportunity of growth for vitamin D testing in Europe. And I gave the example of Italy, which is the third largest IVD market in Europe. The penetration of vitamin D testing is less than 1%, and there is lots of opportunity to grow that market for vitamin D, where today we enjoy a 90% market share.
And penetration in the U.S. is 9.5, right?
The penetration in the U.S. was 9.5 at the end of 2009, going from 5.68% end of 2008.
Thank you.
Next question is from Fraser Hall of Berenberg. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Just a couple of further questions, if I may. Just firstly, with regard to the issue in Brazil, the non-renewal of that contract, are there any other major contracts that are due up for renewal this year that we might need to be aware of? Secondly, you mentioned the parvovirus test. Again, just interested in terms of your plans for further developing the test menu over the next perhaps 12, 18 months, if there's anything more that you can say about that. You alluded to the non-recurring costs in Q4, but it would just be useful to know whether there is a possibility of any further non-recurring costs, if I can put it that way, that might creep in for this year. And then just lastly, I think I heard you say that with regard to negotiations with a potential partner for the MDX molecular diagnostics instrument, discussions are still ongoing there. It seems to be that that's taking quite a long time. I'm wondering if you can give any sense as to what the sort of the gating factors are and when we might expect some further developments with regard to MDX and the LAM technology. Thank you.
Okay, let me. I took note of three questions. Okay.
Yeah,
you got a non-recurring. Non-recurring, which one?
Cost.
Okay. First one on tenders. No, we don't have any significant piece of the business which is attached to a single tender. The Brazilian case is very different because we participated along with bioMérieux to a tender in Brazil based on ELISA technology. And that tender was started, I think, in the second part of 2008 and went through the first half of 2009. And the Brazil is a fairly active market when it comes to public tenders. That tender has been completed, the supply has been completed in June 2009. And then it was very significant. It was several million euros that was split between us and bioMérieux. And then since then, the government, there has been some issues in Brasilia, and they have not started the tender process again. So all of a sudden, we have lost a significant portion of business in Brazil. remember, is a business in that case with a lower profitability than Liaison. So on one side you have the Liaison business growing in Brazil, on the other side you have a sudden loss of these revenues. And so the net-net effect is that in the second half you would see the overall sales decreasing, but the underlying Liaison business is increasing. So once that effect is gone for Brazil, we expect double-digit growth to start again in 2010. Second question has to do with menu development, if I remember correctly, and the new launch of new products. Let me say, HIV, HCV, and HBV, those projects have been now completed and under filing. We reverted to business as usual in terms of product development, and we have initiated the development of 12 products that are starting from now through June in the three manufacturing sites. We have not disclosed yet our R&D funnel, and we plan to do so early in the next couple of months. Okay, but let me tell you that they are products that continue our traditional strategy in terms of specialties in infectious disease areas and bone and mineral specialties. When it comes to molecular and the delay of the system, the reason for that is that in order to speed up the process, we spent a very significant amount of time putting together comprehensive, we call it PDR, product development requisites. And based on that, we first went to a company and asked them for a quotation. And once we got the quotation, we got puzzled in terms of certain aspects of this. So we decided then to move to a second company and proceed with benchmark. And this is why it's taking longer, because we want to make sure that we select the right one for this project. Let me remind you, though, what I said many times in the past, that molecular diagnostic is a leg that we are building, and we expect it to contribute to the growth of this company 2-3 years from now. And so this is why usually we keep it very low-key, and we just give some brief information about it.
Okay, Fraser, as far as non-recurring are concerned, you're right in thinking that I may have used the terms improperly. My point about them is just that these are costs which have to do with the way we manage the business, but just don't take the quarter times four, because these costs are, as we said, related to, for instance, the our IT structure, and we don't change service provider every quarter, as well as we don't open a new subsidiary every quarter. We didn't make a mystery of the fact that in 2010 we are going to go direct in Australia, and therefore you will find in the future costs which are associated to that operation, but it's not a recurring event.
Understood. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Next question is from Smith Peters of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, it's Fitz Peters, Goldman Sachs. Most of my questions have already been asked, but a few more. One is about the what you think the trajectory for the existing RIA and ELISA business is going to be now that the Biotrend acquisition has fully worked its way through on a year-on-year basis. Also, the you gave us growth of comparable FX for North America and for rest of world. I'm wondering what it was for rest of Europe, just because I know that there's some UK in that as well. And finally, if you've got some guidance for CapEx spending for next year, including the Liaison equipment that will be purchased and then placed with customers.
Go ahead.
Okay. Let me start from Europe. We do not report a figure in a cost of exchange rate in Europe, for the simple reason that the effect is fairly marginal. You're right in thinking that the UK pound has devalued versus previous year, but our turnover in the UK market is fairly limited as compared to the total turnover of Europe. So I would expect the effect to be totally marginal. I could not remember your other, in terms of CapEx, we do believe, although you know we don't give, we don't provide numbers guidance, but we do believe that is the capital expenditure at similar level as we experienced this year will bear on 2010 as well. And in terms of the development of the technologies, we believe that our RIA in the future, if you discount the fact that vitamin D is in one form or present under RIA technology, will continue to decrease slightly, whereas ELISA will probably remain flat. This year, if you discount the effect of the Brazilian tender, which again was an ELISA tender, and the change in the consolidation area regarding the biotin products, that would be the result.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next question is from Luca Orsini of One Investments. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. It's actually Mauro Garbero. I've got a couple of questions. The first one relates to the Liaison installed base. If you can give us the annualized revenue per box according to your calculation. And the second question refers to your P&L, in particular to the OPEX increase that you experienced in the fourth quarter. And I was wondering the 29/30 million per quarter can be a guideline for the next fourth quarter of 2010. Thank you.
Okay, I'll take this question. First of all, in terms of install base, our revenue per machine, if you look at the full year sales of Liaison and the full year install base, went up from about 61,000 euros in 2008 to just above 70,000 euros per machine in 2009. As far as OPEX are concerned, I think I mentioned already the effect of the non-recurring events, as I call them. I think that if you look at the current rate of operational expenses, that is on average, and I repeat, on average, representative of what we expect to happen or to be our budget in 2010, at the level that we experienced in quarter four. So we don't expect that level to increase on average in 2010 much further.
Thank you.
If I'm allowed to follow up, it's Luca now. Just looking at your guidance and looking at what one can call informed consensus, the market is going for 15% growth, and you talk about 10% growth, and you've been guiding pretty tight in the past, and you know, and as consensus was very aligned on this set of numbers. Can you shed some light on that?
I think that if you read carefully the guidance, it says a growth above 10%.
Okay. You don't go further than that.
As a policy, we don't. I think that if you look at, there are now several analysts that follow the company, and I think they have a very good understanding by now of what the potential of the company is in the market it's playing, and they have a very good understanding of our strategy. So you can go revert to the analyst, in my opinion, to get an understanding of what you could expect from this company in 2010.
Yes. And again, since you are on the guidance, can you confirm that the gross margin you expected to increase in this year, 2010?
Based on the structural events that we continue seeing, there is no reason why it shouldn't improve.
Thank you.
Next question is from Gianluca Pediconi of Gruppo Banca Leonardo. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Most of my question has been already asked, but just one clarification. Did I properly understand you are planning maybe to delay the launch of the Excel Liaison in order not to jeopardize the current machine? And related to this, what I'm interested is if you could elaborate on what is, in your opinion, the potential sales of the Excel Liaison in a couple of years, 3 years. So that would be really, really helpful. Thank you very much.
I think I can take the first question, the first part of the question, and give you, I hope, an educated answer, but not on the second one, obviously. When it comes to the Liaison Excel, you know, we have a conundrum over here because the current Liaison is going so well and growing so strong that we are very careful in terms of the Liaison Excel, because as we stated in the past, the day we announce a viability of Liaison Excel, we will immediately freeze the current Liaison. And therefore, we are working on product validation on the Excel. We are working on product development. And as I stated, we filed already one of the three essays according to the request of GMED, and we'll be filing the other two very soon. We expect the viability of these three products by June, July. And we are seriously considering what the strategy should be. It is very clear that whatever strategy we devise for the Excel is going to be driven by geographies, so we will restrict it initially to certain geographies. Europe is the obvious one. And then we will move it, making sure that we don't interfere with the trajectory of the current Liaison, which, again, is growing, I would say, top of the industry.
So just a follow-up, if I may. If I properly understand, that means that you are more focused on the cash flow coming from the current Liaison rather than maybe an increase on the profitability thanks to the new machine. Is that correct, that your focus is more on the cash flow that is still generating the current one, or maybe even affecting a little bit the potential higher profitability of the new one? Is that correct? As a rationale?
No, it's not. I'm sorry. We are focused. Clearly, cash is relevant, but when it comes to our company, today is a growth of top line that is very important, as well as the profitability. The profitability of the company with an EBITDA of 40% is a very good profitability, and that is generated by the Liaison, but will be generated as well by the Liaison Excel. So we don't expect an improvement in profitability because of the Liaison Excel. In terms of the top line growth, the interest that customers do show still on the Liaison is tremendous, and therefore we want to use the Liaison as much as possible before we switch to the new platform, because, again, as soon as we announce the Liaison Excel, the Liaison will freeze automatically. And it would be a real pity, in my opinion, to freeze a technology, an instrument that today is performing so well. So that's the conundrum that we have, but meanwhile, we are working internally in the company to prepare the launch.
Very kind of you, very clear. Thank you.
Next question is from Guy Thornwell of Rafa. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good afternoon. Just to follow up to the previous question again, sorry. Is there a chance then in your current thinking that you may not launch the Liaison Excel at all until next year? Thank you.
No, I think that there is a chance that we will limit the launch of the Liaison Excel to very specific geographies and very specific customers. That's a possibility. Because again, you need to understand that HIV, HCV, and HBV, the new product lines, do carry this company inside a market that today is not touched by the current Liaison, because we don't offer those products on the current Liaison. So if we tie the launch of Liaison XL to the availability of these three products, then we would limit the some specific geographies. We would clearly limit the risk of freezing the Liaison and cannibalization of current Liaison, because this is an untapped opportunity where Biosorin doesn't carry any specific weight. So what we are developing as a strategy is something that is exploiting new opportunities without necessarily freezing the Liaison.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you.
Okay.
Next question is from Roberto Casoni of Otus Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, hi. Good afternoon. I just want to touch a bit on the previous question you have been receiving regarding your 2010 targets. I want just to put the question differently from I think it was Orsini. Is there any risk you can see at the moment whereby you will not be able to reach your 10% plus sales growth or your improving gross margin in 2010?
It's a little early, but let me make a comment. I think the fundamental of the business, as you know, have been good quarter, and if you do an extrapolation of our current rates, quarter raising revenues, you can see that the company is performing above the 10%.
Yes.
Okay, so from what I see today in my crystal ball, I don't think that there is a big risk that we would be missing what analysts consider as by consensus a target for revenues.
Okay.
If I had a crystal ball, I would play the lotto.
Me too.
Okay.
So you don't think the current situation, circumstances in certain countries, possibilities of a cut in or reduction in reimbursements could somehow, going forward, threat your growth?
No, I don't see at the horizon, from a regulatory perspective and a reimbursement perspective, anything that can affect the business model of Biosorin. As I commented in previous conference calls, the biggest threat would have been in the U.S. If what they tried to do last year with curbing vitamin D testing would have been successful. But it's very clear that the clinical evidence is so relevant today when it comes to vitamin D that didn't succeed. So there's nothing else on the horizon that I can see today from that perspective that can create an issue for Biosorin.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Next question is a follow-up from Luca Orsini of One Investments. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking the follow-up. Is again on this Excel machine. My understanding was that you were trying to launch this machine with the three new products, so to create additional sales, as opposed to just replace a machine with a wider spectrum of tests available. Am I right?
Yes, you are correct. You are correct, but there is, let me say, there are two aspects of this. There is one which is we launch it with HIV, HCV, and HBV, okay? It is very clear, though, that what we learned in the past is that, especially in the market segment where we play, which are not the large blood banks where Abbott is king, so it's more the hospital diagnostic market, it's very clear that you would need to couple those with all the other infectious disease products that we already have, especially if you want to leverage on the existing positioning of Diasorin in certain countries with the liaison infectious disease. I made an example before where I stated that Italy is a great example where we have 700 liaisons, so we have a liaison pretty much placed in every virology or microbiology lab, and it would be very clear that we could tap into that base adding the Liaison XL, but that would require the Liaison XL to have also the rest of the infectious disease on board. And once we do that, which clearly is there because there are existing assays that are in validation of the Liaison XL, when we do that, it is difficult then to limit only to HBV and HBsAg, and HCV. You would be immediately taken by the market to also the infectious disease customers. So it's not as easy, in my opinion, to decouple new sales with the Liaison XL and the old product. Okay, so when you introduce the liaison there, you have to offer on the liaison the whole infectious disease, so not only the new product, and by definition, you would then freeze the liaison for just infectious disease. It is, as we have discussed when we met, is a very complicated scenario. Other companies have been there in the past, and some have been successful, some made a lot of mistakes, and we want to be very careful to make sure that we will be ranked among the successful ones, okay?
In managing the process of the migration.
In managing the migration, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
You know, sorry if I made a last comment. The real problem here is that if the liaison was lingering and suffering, it would be a very easy decision. You know, you stop it and move on. But when you have 460 systems placed in 1 year, you see the rate strong, you have visibility in 2010, and you still see a very high demand, it becomes a touchy situation.
You know, I can see that. Thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. Next question is from David Robinson of Delton Strategic Partnership. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if you could just draw any light on any competing products in the vitamin D area, whether you're seeing any emerging in the US or in Europe. Thank you.
I don't think that the landscape has changed from the last time we talked. Let me remind you that when it comes to the US, we do have already a very strong competitor to a point that is 50% market. We only enjoy a 50% market share in the U.S. The rest is in the hands of mass spec. When it comes to Europe, Roche has been there for now 2 years. I mean, not only Europe, but the rest of the world, and we've been competing with Roche. And IDS, I think, recently they launched their small system with vitamin D. IDS is not necessarily a direct threat to Diasorin because they direct their sales toward smaller accounts. So quite often we don't see them, we don't compete with them on the accounts. Now, if you listen to the other companies, it is very clear that vitamin D is on the front page of major newspapers in the U.S. and in Europe, and I believe there is an honest effort to develop vitamin D, but we will see. I don't think, to be honest with you, that competition will never arise. I think competition will arise, and this is why we are spending our resources today to build brand around our vitamin D in terms of clinical value, because competition will show up.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosa, there are no more questions at this time.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.